Food is a constant in our lives. Every day we get hungry, so we eat. We grow crops, raise livestock, or we work so we can go and pick up groceries, choose a recipe, then we cook and eat, maybe with others around a table. As we eat, we are being nourished, gaining energy to live another day. Food is one of the things that gives us life. This is so familiar to us, we barely give it a passing thought. Yet the fact that we have to eat so much is a reminder of how fragile we are. We need food to keep going. But sometimes we can't eat. Sometimes grief can cause us to lose our appetites. Sometimes there isn't enough food, or the price is too much for us, so we go without. Sometimes people choose to restrain themselves and for a time fast. That's what parts of the church practice during Lent. They cut back, keep it simple, feel their hunger and fragility, wondering perhaps, is there really something more after death? And what would that look like anyway? There is Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathaniel, and others in a boat, doing what comes naturally to them, fishing. It's Peter's idea. They've been doing this since they were kids, helping their dads out on the boats, trying to make a living, trying to feel the hunger. It's not an easy job, but it's familiar. They did leave it behind for a moment. Abandoned their livelihoods to follow Jesus. What a crazy adventure that was. Hearing him teach, seeing him heal and feed the hungry, stand up against the religious leaders. But then, Peter let Jesus down. On that terrible night, as Jesus was arrested and beaten before he was crucified, Peter pretended like he didn't know him. Had never known Jesus, never followed him. That's it, he thinks. No place at the table for him now or in the future. Peter can't turn back, can't undo what has already been done. It doesn't even matter that Jesus is now alive. I mean, that's wonderful, but it doesn't remove what he did. It somehow makes it worse. Peter knew Jesus was different. He knew he was the Messiah, the one they'd been waiting for, and still he betrayed him. So Peter goes back to what he knows. There's not much left, but there is this. Pathetic as it is. Tonight he's hoping they'll catch something they can eat, prove that he's still useful. So they cast the nets. But the nets are still. The night is still. The water so flat, it just reflects the darkness back to Peter, and they catch nothing. He can't even do this. His stomach rumbles. The boat creaks as the water rocks them. Pink and purple light begin to mark the sky and the waters. Peter sighs. He's tired. Tired with work, tired with his own self. He watches the mist drifting across the shoreline and out onto the water, and then hears a voice breaking the stillness. Friends, haven't you any fish? No, they reply automatically, looking around, trying to work out where the voice is coming from. Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. Tentatively at first, and then with more confidence, they do. That voice is familiar, the command, and then this action. They have been here before. The nets fill, bulge with fish, and they struggle to haul the catch into the boat. Then someone shouts, "It is the Lord." And the next thing Peter knows, he's grabbed his outer garment around him and jumped into the water. It is cold, but he pushes forward, struggling, but not actually making much progress. His friends have to help him back onto the boat. They pull him into the shore. Excitedly, they are counting the fish, 153. But Peter Peter is staring at Jesus. There is Jesus, tending a fire of burning coal. "Come and break your fast," says Jesus. "I can hear your stomach rumbling. Sit down, here's a plate full of smoked fish and bread. Eat." Peter sinks into the sand, water still dribbling down his face. The fish sizzle and hiss as they are cooked. Bread is passed around, and then they eat. "Come and break your fast." Jesus says these words not just to Peter, but to us. Life is fragile, isn't it? Often there is grief and loss. Some of us know this deeply. Some of our loved ones have died. Isn't it a little strange that often we end funerals by eating? Maybe it's a sign that life has to go on, that we need to keep eating because for now we are still alive. Maybe it helps us relax and share stories of our loved ones. Sometimes we'll eat their favorite meal to help us remember them, to honor them. For a moment when Peter hears this voice calling them to lower the nets, it must have seemed like they were reenacting some old memory. But then there is something new. Smoke rising, fish cooking, breakfast on the beach. Maybe we eat at funerals because of this meal. This is a meal to give us hope, to reassure us there is something more after death. There is a meal. Meal is probably not the right word. Feast. Yes, a feast God is preparing. You don't believe me? It sounds too good to be true. Well, Jesus says to Peter and the other disciples, "Touch me. Watch me eat this fish and bread. I was dead and now I am alive." God can raise the dead. God is powerful. It really is me. I'm really here with you and I'm going to always be with you. I'm going to send my spirit to be with you until we meet again. And then, then there'll be such a party, such a celebration. But for now, let's just share this breakfast together in anticipation of what is to come. It's no accident that Jesus has a meal with his disciples after his resurrection. In fact, the majority of the encounters people have with Jesus post his death happen over meals. As bread is broken or fish fried, people are eating and then realize Jesus is eating with them too. It's no accident because as we have seen this term, feasts were central to God's people. It was part of their way of life, part of how they knew God was through meals and feasts when they would tell the story of who God is. God is the God of life. God is our provider and sustainer. God is generous. God forgives and restores. Later, the prophets began to dream about life after death. They described it like sitting down for a banquet. Isaiah 25, verse 6. "On this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. On this mountain, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all peoples, the sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove his people's disgrace from all the earth. The Lord has spoken." And here is Jesus, alive when he should be dead, eating with his disciples once more, signaling that time is now fulfilled. He has swallowed death, and in him there is life. So his disciples early on established the practice of sharing a meal together, breaking bread, drinking juice as a way of marking Jesus' resurrection. Yes, there is still death and grief present in our world. But when we look at Jesus, we are given a reason to hope that there's also something more. That hope should affect the way we live now. I love this story I heard from Max last year. He said every year his family gathers at Easter and they paint and decorate eggs together and then they share a traditional meal. He was excited because Mila was just reaching the age when she could understand and participate more. From the humble breakfast of fish and bread on the beach, this feast has expanded. I think there's a heavenly scroll with recipe after recipe written down, the best, most delicious recipes from this day. I think all sorts of food will be prepared and cooked and placed on God's table when the dead are raised to life and sit with God. I once celebrated Easter with a Filipino-inspired banquet prepared by my stepmother. Lamb or fish is commonly eaten. In South Africa, they eat Cape Marley pickled fish at Easter. But let me just focus on the desserts for a moment. In Russia, they use cheese curds pressed into molds to form a pyramid. They're often white in color to remind people of the purity of Jesus, and then they write into the cake the letters XP, which stands for Christ is risen. Or in Polish households, they pass down lamb molds through the generations in order to create a cake that will symbolize the Lamb of God, Jesus, now risen. Both the Polish and also Ukrainian households actually don't just stop there. They will actually prepare baskets filled with eggs, sausages, bread, butter, and bring it outside the church for the priest to bless. Every item trying to tell the story of Jesus' death and resurrection. Jamaicans eat spiced bread filled with raisins and then place a slice of cheese between the bread. In the UK, apart from hot cross buns, there is the simmelcake made with a layer of marzipan in the middle, and on top there are 11 balls to represent the apostles, with Judas left out because he never seemed to come back to Jesus. Maybe he didn't know there was a place for him at the table too. In Spain, godparents will give this cake to their godchildren on Resurrection Sunday. The Mona de Pascua cake is kind of like a large donut topped with eggs and feathers. Bakeries compete to create the most extravagant Mona de Pascua, displaying them in their shop windows. Italians bake bread in the shape of a dove, flavoring it with orange peels, sugar, and almonds. There is so many eggs and butter and milk used in these recipes, so much sweetness trying to capture the joy of Jesus' resurrection in a meal. And I love that different cultures and times have used their creativity and formed traditions which they can pass on to their children and then their children's children, so everyone might know that there is a place for every person at God's table. And then there is this, my attempt at sweet bread, inspired from a traditional Greek recipe. I want to invite you now, as we pass around this bread, to have a bite, celebrating the hope we have that there is something more, life after death. They eat the most delicious meal Peter has ever tasted. He wants to know the recipe. They eat until they are completely full and not another morsel can be swallowed. And then Jesus turns to Peter and asks him, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" Peter can't look at Jesus. Jesus doubts his love. Of course he does. After what he has done, there's no place for him. This breakfast was nice, so generous of Jesus. But of course there's no place now. What he's done is unforgivable. Still, he speaks the truth to Jesus. "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus says, "Feed my lambs." "And Simon, son of John, do you truly love me?" This time Peter looks at Jesus. There are tears on his face. "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus says, "Take care of my sheep." And then a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter kicks at the sand, hurt, knowing how deeply he must have hurt Jesus. "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." As he speaks, a lightness descends. Jesus is smiling at him and he realizes there's still a place for him. There's room at God's table. "Feed my sheep," says Jesus. We tend to read this spiritually a call to Peter, a call for Jesus' disciples to look out for one another and nurture each other in our faith. And I'm sure that's part of what Jesus is asking Peter to do here, but they've just had this really good meal and now Jesus is talking about feeding others. We live in a world where some still go hungry. There should be enough food for everyone, but somehow not everyone gets to enjoy feasting. God taught people to be generous, showed us how to care for land and the animals and the fish and the birds. God loves this world, but somehow we don't always believe that. How do we end up here in a world where there is starvation and poverty and also gluttony and obesity? Maybe because we don't start at the most basic level. We hear feed my sheep and ignore the obvious. The physical is important. This world is important to God. Look around at the water and the morning sky and the sand and the fish. Look at Jesus resurrected. It all matters. And isn't it gorgeous? God is reconciling all of earth to heaven, and we are to participate in what God is doing. We eat chocolate at Easter now as a way of celebrating. The Cadbury family in 1875 were one of the first to start this tradition, creating first dark chocolate eggs filled with chocolate drops that people could eat and enjoy at Easter. But they didn't just encourage people to buy chocolate eggs. They grew up eating at God's table. The two brothers, John and George, they knew Jesus. They were Quakers, and they had heard over many meals and through many conversations of God's love that all people are equal in God's eyes. So the two brothers, in 1879, when they went to open a factory, purchased land which was beautiful and lush with a stream running through the site. They set about building not just a chocolate factory, but a whole village where their workers could live. They wanted every person to be able to have a place to call home, a garden to cultivate, and lots of parkland and open spaces for them to enjoy. Their factory became known as the Factory in a Garden. They campaigned for animal welfare and social reform for all workers. Their whole lives pointed to God's new creation ushered in through Jesus. They were joining the work Jesus called Peter to, feeding and caring for the sheep, pointing towards the reconciliation taking place between earth and heaven in Jesus. So we eat chocolate, biting into the hollow egg and remembering how the tomb was empty. And where was Jesus? Eating a meal on the beach. We eat today anticipating when that work of reconciliation is complete. Peter needs to hear both these things from Jesus. Come and have breakfast with me and feed my sheep. Just like we need to hear Jesus say, I love you and there is room for anyone to be here at my table. Eat this meal with me and find healing. It's a new day. Then we can hear the second part. Feed my sheep. Gather others in for a meal and tell my story across every culture and language. And when language is a barrier, tell it by throwing a feast. On Resurrection Sunday of all days, we don't just eat, we feast. For anyone who is hungry, you are welcome to this table. Come and eat with Jesus. He's alive and he's calling us to sit down and share a meal. Eat and then when you have enough, look for others. Look for those who are hungry. Love them. This is the community Jesus has created. The church is to be a community who gathers around his table, who eats and shares. In anticipation of the great feast we'll one day sit down to and participate in with Jesus. Come and break your fast. Jesus is risen. Let me pass out these chocolate eggs for you to eat and enjoy as we celebrate this good news today.